Heaven is never-ending light. It is jasper and crystal, pearls and gold. It is lightning and rainbows and a great rushing river. It is white horses and doves and angels singing holy, holy, holy. And there is no sadness or pain, no hunger or thirst. Or there is hunger and thirst, but only to make the feasting tables, which are never bare, more pleasurable still. To get there, you must be pious and humble and follow God's laws every day of your earthly life. To the motherless five-year-old listening to such talk from beneath her father's table, it does not seem worth the effort. Sweet as heaven might be, it cannot truly be better than life here and now in Mainz in the year 821. Could angel song truly be sweeter than the plain chant that floats down from the abbey on the hill and fills all the empty spaces in her chest? Are white doves truly more lovely than the woodland throstles with their pale speckled bellies and gold-tinted wings? As for horses, they have those here, as well as lightning and rainbows and the mightiest of all rivers running through town. Pearls and jasper are unknowns, but she has seen crystal and gold, and though they are pretty, there is not much use to either. And why would she wish for never-ending daylight, when it is the coming of night that brings the greatest pleasure? As the day fades, the serving girls lay out platters of meat and bread and ale, and then men come through the door and take their place around the table, underneath which she is already settled. The packed earth floor is worn smoother than marble here, and heated so richly by the hearth fire that when she is finally dragged to bed, she can serve as her own warming stone. Truly, right here is all the heaven she needs, a girl-sized paradise, ending where the rushes begin, their edges trampled flat by pairs of boots more often than not. Sometimes the men sit long enough for the mud caked on their ankles to dry, and she makes a game of guessing which clods will fall first. Sometimes a man jiggles his legs or stomps his feet, and she must cover her nose and mouth to stop from breathing in his dirt. If the men are very drunk or very angry, their legs might dance wildly about and she must stay alert or be kicked. If they are only a little drunk and feasting, then she may feast too, on the scraps they drop unknowingly into her realm. The men are merchants and traders, messengers and envoys, clerics and clergymen. They gossip and argue and bargain into the night at her father's table because he is a personal friend and confidant to the Archbishop. And even a child knows this is not unrelated. A man of both influence and wealth. There are contracts and favours to be won, grudges to be supported, controversies to be quelled or fuelled. There is a long, solid table, laid with good food and better ale. Her father is known to all as the English priest, although he speaks the common tongue as well as any Frank and hasn't performed the rites nor worn the stole since before her birth. But he hails from Wessex and came to the continent in the missionary footsteps of his slain countryman, St. Boniface, so the English priest he will always be. On nights he forgets she is there, the daughter can hear tales of her father's early days in Francia. For almost 3 decades he travelled this land, finding souls for God and King Charles, saving generations of Saxon babes from lives spent worshipping rocks and afterlives of eternal torment. He rode ahead of Charles's army, blessing whole towns that had warning from gore-splattered refugees of what was coming. On occasion he was barely in time, the soldiers' sweat already watering the ground on which the pagans fell to their knees and begged for baptism. Not all accepted the proffered gift, preferring the sword to salvation. Even those her godly father did his best for, praying for their eternal souls as their bodies bled out. By King Charles's death in 814, the work was all but finished. Most villages the English priest passed through welcomed him and asked not only for a blessing, but also for advice on raising a church of their own, on sacraments and saint days, on the rights and wrongs of proper Christian living. Though now and then he came upon people who held to the old ways, he found their reluctance easily shifted once he assured them they could still have their festivals and rituals, so long as they used the rightful Christian names and replaced their idols with a simple cross. In one of these still pagan places, he saved the soul of the woman who would soon bear his child. Whether the saving happened before or after he lay on her was unclear. Given the exalted way in which the men at table talk about rutting, it may well have been during.